AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. There was a vigil in Jacksonville, Florida last night at a Dollar General store where three black people were shot to death Saturday. The FBI is investigating it as a hate crime. Correspondent Manuel Bajorquez is there.
Among the three people killed was Gerald Galleon, who was shot as he entered the store. He leaves behind a four-year-old daughter.
How do you even begin to explain to her what happened?
We haven't.
You haven't?
She doesn't know yet.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
We're trying to figure out the words to tell her, because she was a daddy's girl.
LaTiffany Galleon is the victim's sister.
He was a loving guy.
A loving guy.
He was a devoted father. He'd do anything for his daughter. And for him to get up and wake up and his life get ended, it's not fair.
21-year-old white gunman shot himself to death. People along Florida's Gulf Coast are getting ready for Idalia, a tropical storm expected to power up to a major hurricane before it makes landfall tomorrow. Deborah Steele used a new automated sandbag filling machine in Tampa.
It was a big difference not having to sit here and wait while I'm stressing out anyway.
WTSP's Bobby Duskin.
Tuesday afternoon into the evening hours, now forecast to be a 110 mile per hour category 2 hurricane. 111 is Cat 3, major hurricane. The Hurricane Center says that's not out of the question.
Four major wildfires are burning in Louisiana. At least one person has been killed. CBS's Janet Shamlian.
Firefighters are racing to battle the rapidly spreading flames in northeastern Louisiana, where the Tiger Island fire forced the 1,200 residents of Maryville to evacuate.
It's moving pretty fast, and you can feel the air picking up.
State fire officials on Sunday said the blaze has grown to 33,000 acres, up from an estimated 15,000 acres Friday.
The Secretary of Commerce, the latest U.S. official to pay China a visit. Correspondent Cammie McCormick.
Secretary Gina Raimondo is the latest visitor, hoping to reduce the tensions between the U.S. and China. She said in Beijing today that the two countries have agreed to exchange more information on export control enforcement.
We are not compromising or negotiating in matters of national security, period. But this is meant to be a dialogue where we increase transparency and where we are clear about what we are doing as it relates to export control enforcement.
China has criticized U.S. efforts to block its access to some advanced semiconductors.
Air travel's a mess in the U.K.
Britain's air traffic control system has apparently crashed on this, the end of a three-day holiday weekend here and a busy travel day.
Look, Vicky Barker from London. S&P futures are up 21. This is CBS News.
Eggland's Best. The only eggs with more fresh and delicious taste, plus superior nutrition. Because the way we care is anything but ordinary. Only Eggland's Best.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. A second offense OWI charge was filed last week against a Wauwatosa police officer. Charges were filed in Dodge County against Sergeant Kyle Strands for an incident last month in Waupun. Investigators say Strands was involved in a crash where an 11-year-old ran in front of his car, resulting in a fractured wrist. A complaint says Strands refused a breath test at the scene and later had a blood test showing a blood alcohol content of 0.236. A goal of raising $57 million and an aim to help spread technology is the main focus of the United Way of Greater Milwaukee and Waukesha County's latest campaign. A big event was held recently at the American Family Amphitheater, where details about what's called the Techquity program were shared. Leaders say the program aims to bridge the digital divide in the area. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, how you doing? How was the weekend?
Yeah, the weekend was pretty good. Pretty good. And I did watch the football game that you were talking about with Gilbert. And I'm hopeful.
Yeah, the Packers, you know, they've got a lot of talent. Man, there's a lot of talent to choose from.
It
in
seems
the NFL.
Like it. You know, and it seems like the NFL's more and more people are coming on the scene and making and in the first 4 or 5 years, coming on unheralded. There's more and more free agents who make it big, and I think it has to do with the breadth of talent coming out of college and the willingness of general managers to pursue people who might cost a little less money.
You just hit the nail on the head. They're clearly, when you pay a quarterback $60 million a season, you can't afford the guy, everybody.
Well, and to be honest with you, I predict there that the Jalen Hurts model is gonna take off. And that's going to be a cheaper version of a quarterback. It doesn't take as much passing skill. It takes, it's the big
athleticism,
a big athletic, able to run. You know, it's almost like Tim Tebow, but much better, yeah. I guess, than Tim Tebow. But I just think, and those guys are going to be cheaper. There'll be more of them.
Yeah. Let's get right at it. Sandy, we're right back. And why is it we're always at this point, we're at it again, talking about government shutdown. Why can't we come to a point that we don't always get to this showdown with government shutdown? Is it always because they want to add all these other things?
I think it's theater. I think if they were really serious about trying to moderate the expenditures of government, they would do it 7 days a week instead of just on Sunday when it's time for the debt, the approval of the debt limit or the budget renewal process. And so I think it's theater, and I think that's what it is. You know, they could be negotiating a budget that would, but they don't sit down and negotiate. They take hard lines so that they can get to this point of the histrionics, the theater of demanding a shutdown, suggests to the public that they're heroically standing in the way of what will otherwise be immense expenditures by the government. So that's what the stage they're trying to set with this. And meanwhile, they don't negotiate on the budget, which is the place where they could actually accomplish something. So I think it's all pre-motivated theater.
Well, I can tell you that Senate Republicans are signaling that they're in no mood to back conservative members of the House Freedom Caucus. So, you know, they agreed when they were talking about the debt raising, the debt limit, the Republican Senate agreed with the House, Republican House, and stuck with them. But now Mitch McConnell is saying, we're not feeling what it is you're talking about. In other words, adding all these other outside expenditures that have nothing to do with that, with, you know, the debt.
Well, I think Nikki Haley hit the nail on the head during the debate when she looked at the Republicans and said, look, who are the big spenders? This party that has $7.5 billion of earmarks in a budget, which is the Republicans, or is it the Democrats who have $2.5 billion of earmarks? I mean, earmarks are sort of under the radar kinds of things that became very popular in the 90s as a way to get stuff done in Washington in the dark and get a bunch of money spent on behalf of special interests.
But those things add up.
Add up, sure.
If all the different senators want something and Congress people want something in their backyard,
yeah,
those things add up.
Yeah, $7.5 billion, that's called pork. That's stuff that are specially done on behalf of different members in the U.S.
You
Congress.
Know, I have to say that Mitch McConnell, several weeks ago, they were signaling the end of Mitch McConnell. And now Mitch McConnell is apparently a little more healthy, and Mitch McConnell is really kind of the stopgap when it comes to making these kinds of decisions that he doesn't allow just, you know, some of this crazy pie-in-the-sky kinds of things, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. He has some stability, right?
Well, he must. He has some sway in the caucus, obviously, in the Senate caucus.
Right.
And right now, that is, as a minority leader, that's all he's got is his ability to cajole his caucus members. He doesn't have the ability to he can affect appointments to some extent. I'm sure that the majority leader deals with his recommendations from the minority as to who will sit on which committee. So he and minority leaders have power, but he's been there a long time, and he's probably got a lineup of people behind the scenes, people that he can call upon, lobbyists and others who can work on his behalf.
Well, you know, and Sandy, I guess what I'm really kind of pointing to is these earmarks that the House are trying to add mm-hmm. to the budget. And they're saying, well, you got to give us this or we're not going to agree. And we're talking about, again, the budget. And so we know they're going to come to an agreement, right? I mean, it's safe to say that.
Well, like I said, I think when it's theater, there is a predictable final act, you know? But the theater is designed to keep us all in suspense. It's like the mystery you go to where you actually know the outcome, but you still like the excitement of the process. You like the third act, even though you know the end, what's going to happen in the end.
You know, Sandy, I want to go here now. Where is it at? The United States is pumping oil faster than ever. And yet, you know, with what has been projected, Saudi Arabia, who said that they were going to basically hold our nation hostage by producing less oil and forcing the prices. And yeah, the prices have increased to some degree, but the government is pumping oil faster than ever.
The government?
Yes.
You mean out of the reserve?
States, the United States is pumping oil
yeah,
faster.
It's not the government.
Not the government.
No, it's the oil marketplace
right.
responding. Well, sure. When the price goes up, the stimulus is for the producers to produce more. And the United States, in spite of the fact that people wanting to complain that Biden did so much to shut down the oil industry, the oil industry is basically only limited by its refining capacity. And so, you know, they will max out on the government, on the national refining capacity with production when the price goes up. And that's what's happened. They've maxed out. Or they will max out, and it's not It's not the result of production issues. It's the result of refinement capacity, the constraint that we have on the amount of gasoline.
Well, so this continued battle, Sandy, about refinement and producing other refinement facilities. I don't know. We haven't built a new refinery in.
Well, the problem is that refineries it's hard to find a place where the people are willing to have them built, but there aren't many people proposing to build them either because they are so terribly expensive to build that you have to recover the cost of that new refinery out of future revenue derived from future refinement, right? And if you project that the volume of oil to be refined in 2032 is going to be less than 2023, then you don't want to produce a new refinery that's going to create excess capacity. So this is a result of the financial community and the people who own these oil companies. It's really their prognostication about the marketplace that is causing them not to build new refining capacity. It's not that someone is standing in the way of it. It's their projection of how much gasoline and other refinements of oil will be in demand.
So is it safe to say to the oil producers, they really don't care who the president is?
There's a lot of political talk about all this, but yeah, there are not oil companies standing in line to build new refineries because the projected demand for oil will not support more refining capacity in the not too distant future. So you don't want to spend billions of dollars to build a new one that's now going to be excess capacity, because when you have excess capacity, the price for everyone goes down, not just that extra refinery, but everyone's refinery. The price goes down when you have too much capacity.
So at the root of it is not the people who are saying we need less fossil fuels. It is, in fact, what you say.
Well, the trend towards the level of oil use has something to do with less fossil fuels in the future. Electric cars are going to drive down the use of gasoline. And so there's a bunch of factors coming into play that's going to limit the demand for oil in the future. But I'm just saying it's the market mechanism that is deciding whether or not to build new refineries.
You know, and the more we realize again that our nation is pumping more oil than any other nation on the planet.
Yeah, we produce more oil. We don't necessarily have the biggest reserves. I actually think Venezuela, which is not producing as much, might currently have what is viewed as the biggest reserves potentially. But we produce a lot of oil. But the problem with a commodity like oil is its price is determined at the margin. And when a big producer like Saudi Arabia or Russia decides to reduce production, that's apt to drive the price up. And so there's the whole reason for the cartel, the OPEC, was set up to try and control prices. It was an anti-competitive effort in the 70s by the Mideastern countries to set up a mechanism for coming closer to fixing the price of oil.
So it's safe to say we're at our capacity.
I suspect that, I'm not an expert. I haven't looked at production, but I'm confident that we're moving in the direction of operating at full capacity at the refinery level.
All right, we've got to go to a break. It's Monday. Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You can join us at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
High of 79 this afternoon, under mainly sunny skies, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 58 tonight, mainly clear. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tomorrow. Highs around 77, a mix of clouds and sun. Mainly clear skies Wednesday, with daytime highs approaching 70. 76 Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 64 degrees.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. It means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams.
On the drive here, I realized one thing. I always sort of do a fact check on myself. And Friday, I think I repeated something I'd said privately, that California constituted 30% of our GDP. It's actually 15%. I was wrong.
Well, even at 15%.
Oh, it's a huge chunk.
Right.
It's a huge chunk, and it's the biggest of all the states, but it wasn't quite as gargantuan as I suggested with my words.
Well, you know, 15% is still, you know.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Let's go to Charles from Green Bay.
Okay.
Good morning to you, Charles. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Yeah, I got a question. All right. If, you know, I'm 71 years old. I have a pension, and I am collecting my Social Security.
You sound like me.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm living the dream. The question I've got is this: first of all, I thought blackmail was against the law. That's what the Republican Party does whenever they can't get anything. They sit and they hold their hands and they say, we're not going to do it. Just like Mitch McConnell did with Obama Supreme Court deal. The thing is, I'm looking at, you know, on a fixed income, I'm living on a fixed income, and my grocery bill has gone up 25%. Yeah, I understand.
You're not alone. You're not alone.
Yeah, everybody's has. And it gets to the point where, you know, you have to choose on if you want to enjoy having to go out for dinner with your wife or eat at home. You know, what are we going to do about that? You know, and it's corporate gouging, just like they did during the pandemic. I mean, how can some companies make billions and billions of dollars, and where is that? You know, somebody's got to curb this, and the Republicans are against taxing the rich and the corporates, because, you know, they get their money from those rich and corporate people so that they tie, if they tie the government up. I'm sorry, but what we really need to do, in my opinion, is to clean out the whole house, everybody's fired, and say you can't seek re-election. And if Lauren Boebert gets re-elected a second time, she can collect her third time, she can collect her pension from Congress at 35.
So Charles, hang on. Let's Sandy respond.
Well, you spoke a mouthful, Charles. The first thing about blackmail, you know, in Wisconsin, we have a law against log rolling, it's called, where legislators are not permitted to trade this for that, tit for tat. That's not allowed. And it's very unseemly, and it's very bad public policy at the federal level to have that kind of horse trading, because you can end up with some bad legislation and some bad expenditures, and it's basically used to expand the budget. It's one of the reasons we spend so much, is everyone's horse trading and in the dark, unbeknownst to us in Washington. You know, about inflation, you know, inflation is an issue, and everyone on fixed income has to face it. But our economy has been quite solid, and the level of inflation we experienced was a hiccup, but we're much closer now to the 70-year average for inflation. If we can make sure that the problem we have is the lack of enforcement at the federal level of the laws that exist. So when Reagan started disabling government, one of the areas of government that got disabled was the antitrust department of the Justice Department. And so we find big corporations able to do a much more price control than they ought to be. It's called market power. If a company's big enough to have the market power to dictate the price rather than have the marketplace dictate the price to the company, that's market power, and that's not to be permitted under the antitrust laws. But our antitrust division has been asleep for quite a long time, just like Washington has tried to put to sleep most of the regulatory processes that are there to protect the American people. So I agree with you. I think we've got to get money out of politics. We've got to get Washington and politicians back to serving the people. And part of that would be an active government that would be regulating the ability of companies to essentially fix prices.
You know, Sandy, he points out an Achilles heel of Bidenomics, because this has been blamed on Joe Biden, whether or not it's his issue or not.
I mean, the inflation.
Yeah, and the fact that the cost of everything is going through the roof, and that people, you know, fixed income and even people who...
Well, it's interesting. People on fixed income who aren't buying houses are happy that the Treasury bonds are now paying 6%, because that's what they invest in, is that kind of fixed income. So, and I know that we have callers who call in. Gary from Sussex called in and was happy that there were now higher interest being afforded the money that he has in the bank. The flip side of that is that people who are trying to buy houses have more expense to pay for their mortgages,
Charles,
and they're harder to buy a house.
Charles is pointing out he's not even
well, the groceries.
In the market. Yes.
Yeah, the grocery bill. Well, yes. And there was inflation. There was inflation, and the currently under the policies that our government has in place to deal with inflation, interest rates are a prime factor, but part of inflation is that it affects commodities, and one of the commodities that it affects is food.
So that commodity is not going to go back. The genie's not going back in the bottle.
No, but that's safe to say. But the fact is that the profits being earned by these grocery stores has gone up.
Yes, no question.
Same with the profits earned by oil companies. When the price goes way up, they earn more profits, which doesn't really make sense.
Because if we had
competition, the profit margin wouldn't change.
You got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates,
This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Hundreds gathered for a vigil for three black people shot and killed at a Dollar General store in Jacksonville, Florida. Mayor Donna Deegan.
No more division. No more hate. We cannot tolerate hate against our black community.
The gunman, who was white, shot himself to death. Tropical Storm Idalia is expected to strengthen to a Category 3 hurricane before it makes landfall on Florida's Gulf Coast tomorrow. John Gray used a new automated sandbag filling station in Tampa.
The years past, we'd come down here and there'd be a line half a mile down the road with people backed up trying to get sandbags.
Four massive wildfires are burning in Louisiana. At least one death reported. Monica Hickman left her home last week.
Praying for rain, praying for help. It's not just for my home. It's not just for my family. It's for my community.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. A Cedarburg woman allegedly misappropriated funds from local schools serving children with autism and disabilities. A criminal complaint says 42-year-old Heather Wenthold was a principal and executive financial employee at a Sonnenberg school branch. Police say after being fired, Wenthold reportedly deleted thousands of files and shut down the company's email system. She's accused of using the money to buy a hot tub, new appliances, and vacations. Brewers owner Mark Antanasio wants the ball club to stay in Milwaukee and is hopeful for public funding for the team. Talks about stadium funding are advancing, although details are lacking. The urgency to address the depleting funds of the stadium district has leaders in Madison seeking public investment for American Family Field, despite resistance from Milwaukee leaders. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
It's so funny how time can
slip right on away.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines. And Michael from Delavan. Good morning to you, Michael. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
I was kind of wondering what laws that clearly aren't being... Would that also extend to
Michael, like, Michael, we lost you. Repeat it.
So, like, with the antitrust laws, would that also be properly used, like, with Medicare?
You mean with the in the hospital and pharma community in terms of those businesses? Is that what you don't mean Medicare, the government Medicare program? You're talking about healthcare generally.
Yeah, so, like, case in point, with my dad, he's disabled, he's on with a disability, and because the disability is on, he does still do partial work part-time, but because the disability, it's got an extreme limit on it. Now, what I never understood with that, like the guy from Green Bay was saying, is you got this fixed income, but yet he's still getting nailed with random stuff. Case in point, like these donut holes where, this will be out there to help you, but then as soon as you reach that limit, well, now you're on your own. Well, you're on a fixed income, so where exactly is he supposed to pull this, random funds out to try and help? Because, it just doesn't seem right.
It's actually a great question, Michael. Hang on.
Yeah, well, we're conflating a couple of things. I was speaking about antitrust laws. Antitrust laws are applied to businesses, and it's when they have too much market power and are able to fix prices rather than to have the prices dictated to them by the marketplace. So that, for instance, gasoline companies, when things get scarce, the prices go up rapidly, they come down slowly, and the profits go up during periods of scarcity. Same with grocery stores. That shouldn't really happen. If you really had pure competition, the profit margin wouldn't change. So that's antitrust is there to deal with that kind of problem in terms of private industry being in a position to control prices more than they should be able to control prices.
But it's not working, Sandy.
Well, it's not working. And the antitrust division has been put to sleep. Like I said, it was anesthetized beginning in about the Reagan period, and subsequently it's sort of stayed that way. It's beginning to get resurrected in the current administration. We're having more activity related to the health industry, for instance. But what you're talking about, the caller's talking about, is government policy with respect to funds available and also charges as they might apply within the programs of disability, the disability programs and Medicare. And, the way those are operating, they are increasing the sort of the stranglehold that people are experiencing during this period of higher costs.
Michael?
There's tons of people that are, stuck on these fixed incomes due to their situations, and then it doesn't seem like they're getting any help. And, of course, you're being told, we'll contact those representatives, and it's just like, okay, well, those representatives, like you were saying, are the main ones that are causing a lot of these issues, and it just seems like more and more programs are almost being cut, and especially with how much.
I think the thing is that you call in and you describe this problem, and it's being shared by many people, but we watch debates on television, and they don't get talked about it at all. And we have a broken healthcare system. We have a broken system associated with disabilities and health problems. And it's almost like a political third rail. Obama spent all of his political credits getting as far as he did with Obamacare, which actually had this very important influence on now controlling the public view of pre-existing conditions and the requirement that they be dealt with. But, healthcare doesn't get handled, and it's a huge problem. It's a huge problem for our economy. We spend far too much on healthcare in this economy. people who have health problems have to spend far too much of their income or go into bankruptcy as the result of the healthcare system.
You know, Sandy, Michael brings about a point that so many Americans, his father, are dealing with, but they don't understand the complexities of it. I mean, even as you explained it,
yeah,
it's pretty complex stuff.
Well, it's a rock and a hard spot, and the only solution for the broken government programs is for the government to deal with it. But the government doesn't deal with it. They stage political theater about government shutdowns. They stage political theater about social issues that are not going to solve these kind of problems for Tom, Dick, and Mary. You know, social issues inflame us, and they make us talk a lot, but it doesn't help us with respect to our daily lives in terms of our ability to make it.
You know, Sandy,
on our budgets,
the social, just the term social issues have been discredited to mean handouts, and somebody has switched all that around and led people to believe, average Americans, that these social issues are people who, you know, just should have done better.
Well, yeah, that's certainly the government assistance programs have been styled that way. I think now, more recently, when people talk about social issues, they're talking about abortion and some of the things that are emotional in that regard. But yeah, we have a long time ago, and I think Clinton probably contributed to it with the whole debate that surrounded the W-2 program.
Right.
The notion is that if you're getting government assistance, it's because you aren't trying hard enough not to. Okay, you're not. And what we have to do is withdraw government assistance from you so you will try harder to be a productive part of the economy. And there are plenty of people who don't have the option of trying harder, right? Michael's father.
Yeah.
And plenty of other people as well.
Right.
So, you know, this notion that government assistance is the result of indolence on the part of people, indolence being laziness, is misguided. You know, there's no question that incentives are important. We need to keep them. We need to keep track of them. We need to design things so they have the proper kinds of incentives built into them. But they also have to reflect realities. And that's where I'm afraid all this talk about the need to kind of cause people to do everything they can do has gotten divorced from realities.
All right. Let's go to CJ. Welcome back, CJ. You say what?
Thank you, Earl and Sandy. You know, I listen to this term Bidenomics not working. It's a misnomer. The mere fact that inflation is supposedly down, interest rates are way up, and continuing to go up from the Treasury Secretary, you know, it's costing the average home almost $1,000 more since inflation has risen from 1.4% during Trumponomics, and GDP was at 6.8%. You know what it is now? 0.08%. This is a joke. The mere fact they call it Bidenomics, anybody who bought gas, groceries, or tried to heat their homes know it's a joke. So when we hear that the government is the answer, please realize it's not. Government is not your answer. And we're finding out how education is a mere memory for a lot of people. We don't count on education to educate our kids anymore. We shuffle them out of school just so we can create numbers. And now we got uneducated adults, and it's going to continue.
Okay, so
please don't vote for this clown.
Okay,
please.
So let me say this to you, CJ. Maybe you weren't listening, but I clearly, distinctly heard Sandy say less than five minutes ago that inflation wasn't because of Joe Biden.
Well, I said I think inflation was caused by a variety of things. Okay, and And part of it were part of it was government incentive programs, but a big part of it was the supply chain problem. Some of it created by the Trump tariffs and the problems with the Chinese and the upset of the supply chain caused directly by that. Some of it was the Tax Reduction Act that was passed during the Trump years, which is an inflationary impulse in the economy. Some of it was caused by the pandemic and all the problems created by the pandemic and the Ukrainian war. The jump up in food prices was coincident with the beginning of the Ukrainian war. So we can't simplify things. Maybe government isn't the answer. It also isn't the cause of everything. And if Trump wants to take credit for the economy during his period, he's going to have to somehow assume that the government had something to do with the credit he wants to take for the situation, which actually was handed to him by the Biden period, all of which was really the result of the country crawling back from and then sort of leaping back from the ashes of the collapse of the financial system at the end of the Bush administration. So, you know, we can try and draw parallels to all these different political time periods, but the world is more complicated than that. We have to take into account the extent to which different factors might be implicated. The Federal Reserve policies are basically apolitical. The U.S. government actually has dealt far better with the inflation than the rest of the world has. And we are now back at an inflation level that is slightly below, I think, the 70-year average since World War II.
You know, Sandy, inflation, I know, was global. And as you stated, America was doing better than all the other development nations. Not all of them, but was doing better. And so, look at China and the impact that it's had on China.
Incidentally, China's got some serious problems. A big part of their economic growth was being buoyed by their real estate and the extent to which the government was incenting the real estate area. The real estate sector of the Chinese economy is now limping. The Chinese economy is now growing at, incidentally, they're very worried about, and the world is worried about, but the Chinese economy is growing at approximately 5% a year, something that the American economy rarely achieves. And so the Chinese economy problems, though, are being recognized, and we currently have a Department of Commerce emissary going to China to talk to them right now because it's very important to the United States. So we have many callers who want to talk about how we want to bury China, separate from China, disentangle from China, get militarily involved with China. But the fact of the matter is that we have almost a $1 trillion worth of activity, economic activity annually with China, which is a huge entanglement.
Before we go to the phone lines, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You know, it's Monday, and Mondays with Sandy Williams always, you know, a great time. We'll be right back. You're going to pay.
Ain't it funny? It's funny how time slips away.
Kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly clear skies this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 79. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Mainly clear skies again tonight, lows around 58. Chance for scattered storms tomorrow, 77. Partly cloudy skies, upper 60s Wednesday, warmer on Thursday with highs in the mid-70s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 64 degrees.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM.
Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM.
This is The Shaw, WAUK.
At 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sam, that's the Platters. You remember the Platters?
I do remember the
Platters. And so let's do this. It's Monday. That means Monday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines and Al from Grafton. Good morning to you, Al. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Hi, Earl and Sandy. I have a question about the cost of fuel. And if you guys think, is the Biden administration doing everything to keep the cost of fuel down? Because it's like $3.80 now or $3.60, and you know that's just for the low grade stuff, and it's making a difference. And that I think is one factor that may go against the Democrats unless they're able to do something about this, especially when premiums like $4.75 a gallon. It's way too high.
You know, so Al, this is why it's so good to have Sandy, because he can put it in perspective. Sandy?
Well, the government has limited resources to affect prices in the short run. In the long run, they can apply legal pressure with respect to antitrust analysis of the level of market power of various businesses. In the short term, they have the reserve supply of oil that they can release to the market to try and impact and increase the supply of oil. But in a country that has a limit on refining capacity, if that refining capacity is at its max, then increasing the supply of oil doesn't really help you very much in terms of reducing the price in the short run. And because oil is a commodity, it's highly impacted at the margin by activity like Saudi Arabia and the world price of oil. So when the world price of oil goes up, ours will go up as well. Even though we are a bit of an island, we export oil when the price gets high enough elsewhere. We'll put oil on tankers and send it abroad to earn the highest dollar for the barrel of oil that we're selling. So in the short run, you know, we've always found that gasoline at the pump is a very volatile price. And our ability to control it at the government level is somewhat limited. I think Biden gets criticized by people on the right who accuse him of using the government's oil reserves to affect the price of oil at the pump rather than saving it for military purposes. I'm not sure which military purposes that they have in mind, but also they should understand that historically that reserve has been used to relate to the price of oil at the marketplace.
Al?
Can I ask something else?
Yes, sir.
I've heard, too, that the oil refiners that are in this country are under stress from very strong ecological laws and stuff like that to, you know, keep them clean and all that stuff. And it's, a lot of them are just closing down because of the laws are too strict, and they've gotten stricter and stricter, and that's hurting us too. And I'm wondering, you know, if there's something the government, you know, can do to be more reasonable, or if they actually want to have companies make clean refineries here, so we don't have that issue too, like you're talking about. But it's the price is staying high. I mean, you say it's volatile, but I mean, it's just staying high for really since mine got in.
Well, it's gone up and down. It went down more than a dollar. It went up more than a dollar. Went down more than a dollar. I mean, it's stayed higher. But it has been quite volatile within the range that it's been in, just like it has been. With respect to the environmental laws being imposed on refineries, have you spent much time around refineries? I mean, refineries, as they existed in the 50s, were exceedingly noxious kinds of plants.
Cancer causing.
There have been regulations imposed on them, but I think the economists and financiers who look at the level of refining capacity we have discuss it strictly in terms of what is the return on investment for building new refineries, and the big corporations are not stepping forward to do it because they don't think it will support the volume. So the current refining capacity is sufficient to meet the current normalized volume of gasoline required in the country, and it's only at certain times when the refining capacity becomes a problem.
Hey, Al, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. Morning, Sandy. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. And what CJ does on these airways every single day is just propaganda. He just says the same thing over and over and over again. And it's just getting a little sickening that these Republicans, all they have is their one-trick pony, and that is bashing the current administration. They're never part of the solution. They're always part of the problem. And it would be really, really nice if they actually called up and actually gave some ideas of what could be done rather than a tax cut for billionaires, because money in politics is the whole issue of why we can't get anything done in this country. And that was brought to us by the conservative Supreme Court and their different rulings that they've had. So I get very, very offended when people talk about government being bad, because, you know, we the people are supposed to be the government. So all this stuff about government being ineffectual and all these different things, it kind of comes back to us in terms of the problems that are actually existing right now, and allowing the people that we actually put into office that are causing these problems. And the problems are not in the blue states, CJ. The problems are more in the red states, and people like him, because he's just a segment of the population that really thinks exactly the same way he does. So he is a random sample of those people. But, I get very offended when people say government is bad, because if we don't have government, there's a vacuum for something else that can be far, far worse.
Hey, Tom, we got to run, man. Thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, we're done, but I have to say, it's so easy. These things that we're talking about, we got to stop. We're caught constantly, you know, Democrats, Republicans. We're caught with that, and that solution is not going to ever work, is it?
No, and it's also not going to work to basically say that government is the problem. We're at the logical extreme of that now, where we're attacking the courts, we're attacking the police, we're attacking the FBI, we're attacking all the federal elements of law enforcement and law interpretation. And you don't have a country. People talk about not having a country if you don't have a border, but I can tell you when you really don't have a country is when you don't have laws that are being enforced, and where we have people picking and choosing what laws to abide by.
All right, we got to go. I'll be joined tomorrow by Joe McNally. As always, it's great with having Sandy on. We'll be back on tomorrow. Thank you, Calvin. See you Monday. Oh, Tuesday. All right.
I'm this is Lindsay Kindert at 540 WAUK The Shaw. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me, Lindsay Kindert, at info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999 and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.